It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. The acts of terrorism in New York and Washington on September 11th left many Americans feeling vulnerable. The attacks revealed how a well-financed and well-organized group can wreak devastation and death on a massive scale. Terrorism experts say it could have been even worse had biological weapons been used. Biological weapons are diseases such as anthrax and smallpox. They are difficult to make and even more difficult to deploy as weapons. Still, shortly after the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, federal officials went into action. Jim Hughes directs the National Center for Infectious Disease.
We did notify state and local health departments throughout the country that they should heighten vigilance and fully utilize the resources that have been put in place over the past 2.5 years to monitor for any unusual clusters of illness.
There have been no unusual outbreaks reported, but the threat of bioterrorism is so great the government spends an estimated $2 billion a year developing defenses against them. I'm joined now by Bob Carty, a correspondent with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. He has reported extensively on this topic. Welcome, Bob.
Hi, Steve.
Biological weapons are called weapons of mass destruction. Why?
Well, essentially because they are so lethal. We're talking here about viruses, bacteria, fungi, living things. For example, 10 grams of anthrax, a biological weapon, could kill the same number of people as 1 ton of sarin gas, a chemical weapon. And biological weapons could even be comparable to nuclear weapons. There's one estimate, for example, that 200 pounds of anthrax released on a large major city could kill between 1 and 3 million people.
Bob, who has these weapons?
Well, there's a standard list that the experts use of about 10 to 18 countries who may have biological weapons or biological weapons capacity. And that list usually runs Iran, Iraq, Syria, Libya, China, North Korea, Russia, Israel, Taiwan, and then possibly Sudan, India, Pakistan, and Kazakhstan. There may be state-sponsored terrorist groups or international terrorist groups. And there's also some concern that there may be some capacity amongst certain cults, doomsday cults or white supremacist groups.
How easy would it be to get a biological weapon into the United States?
Oh, very easy. And in fact, I've heard this one expert on biological weapons give a talk where he pulls out a small plastic vial from his breast pocket and explains that he's just come through an airport security check without any detection. They're very, very hard to detect. And that, of course, is one of the military advantages, so-called military advantages of biological weapons.
How vulnerable are we to a biological weapons attack?
Everyone agrees there is a threat out there. The question is how great. Colin Powell, the Secretary of State, has said he fears biological weapons more than chemical or nuclear weapons, for that matter. And others share that view. And one of them is Michael Osterholm. I have some tape from him. He's an expert in infectious diseases, the former state epidemiologist in Minnesota, and the author of a book called Living Terrors, What America Needs to Know to Survive the Coming Bioterrorist Catastrophe. Here's Michael Osterholm.
We're talking about a situation where even one single release could be so catastrophic that it would really begin to define our history as pre and post that release. All it's going to take is one event. And as the Irish Republican Army has often said, you have to be lucky all the time. We have to be lucky just once. I'm convinced that it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, where, and how bad it will be.
Not if, but when. Bob, this begs the question why biological weapons have not been used so far.
Well, actually, recall that they were used once in World War II by the Japanese in China, and also used once in a small incident in Japan that perhaps we can talk about. But I think there's several reasons why they've not been used. There are inherent problems with these weapons. After all, if you release them, you can be killed yourself. You can kill your own troops. You can release diseases that cross borders, don't stay in one place, they become pandemics even. And these materials like anthrax or botulism or Ebola or smallpox are hard to produce, they're hard to weaponize in the right shape and size that they can stay alive and infect people over a given time period. Above all, though, I think they're so repugnant. People who would use these would be subject to massive retaliation and wouldn't achieve anything politically. I think for all those reasons, in 1972, the world supported the initiative by President Nixon to initiate a biological weapons treaty to ban the stuff. And people hoped that that would work until, of course, we discovered that the Soviet Union had a secret program.
What was the scope of that Soviet program, and what's the implications of it?
We learned about it in about 1992 from a defector by the name of Ken Alibek. He was the former deputy chief of Biopreparat, the former Soviet Union's military biological weapons program. He now lives outside of Washington, D.C., and here's how he now describes his former biological weapons program in the former Soviet Union.
You know, this program was huge. I would say about 60, maybe 70,000 people involved. Biological weapons would be produced not by grams or kilograms, by tons. For example, 100 tons of plague or something like this. 500 tons, metric tons a year of dry anthrax. In the 80s, the Soviet Union started to develop some genetically altered viruses. And first target, first virus was smallpox virus.
Now, why would the Soviets concentrate on smallpox as a biological weapon?
Well, first of all, because it's very virulent. It kills about 30% of the people who are infected. And for every person infected, about 20 more people will get infected. So it produces successive waves of people with smallpox, people dying, health workers dying, public health systems possibly collapsing. Now, this disease also has a tremendous, sad, historic irony about it, Steve. It was eradicated from the face of the earth. And it was eradicated by a World Health Program under the direction of an American, Dr. D.A. Henderson. The problem was some of the virus was still put in repositories in the United States and in the Soviet Union. And with the collapse of the Soviet Union, you have all kinds of scientists who disappeared, who worked on these programs. And Dr. D.A. Henderson is very worried what happened to those scientists. Here's D.A. Henderson.
They were not being paid very well, and probably a third to a half of the scientists have left the laboratories. We know that Iran, Iraq, North Korea, Libya, all have been actively recruiting Russian scientists. The question is, what has gone with them?
So, Bob, that means, of course, that one of the places that terrorists could get material to put together a bioterrorist attack would be from these former Soviet scientists.
Exactly. Nation states, some of the countries we mentioned earlier, might try to recruit them and set up facilities for them. It might be required, in fact, that a nation state be involved because of the complexity of the operation. That's for most of the biological weapons. The exception might be something like anthrax, because it comes from the corpses of dead animals and could be obtained by small fanatic groups, such as the group in Japan, Om Shinrikyo. That's the doomsday cult that released sarin gas in the Tokyo subway system in 1995 and killed 12 people. But it was after that event they found out that prior to using the sarin gas, Om Shinrikyo had actually tried to use anthrax on 9 or 10 occasions and failed to actually make it work, and that's why they went to the chemical.
Now, what does this mean, that biological weapons, are they easy for groups of fanatics to use, or are they too difficult?
Well, the Om Shinrikyo example is debated hotly still to this day. You know, what does it actually show? Some would argue that it shows that it's hard for groups to use these weapons. In fact, the mistake that Om Shinrikyo made is they used the wrong kind of anthrax. They used the kind of anthrax that is used to make the vaccine for anthrax, and so it's not a kind that produces disease. However, some scientists do say that there's too much hype about the threat of biological weapons. For example, Milt Leitenberg. He's an arms control specialist with the Federation of American Scientists, and he's worried that a lot of the threat is built up by people who want to, in effect, make money from the threat of biological weapons.
There's this whole rabble of contractors. They can't write a study and say, this won't happen, because then there's no grant that follows, and they're out of business. I am an arms control specialist. I do think it's a problem of national programs, Iraq and Israel and the Iranians and what's left of the former Soviet program. But all these terrorist groups with the bathtubs, the kitchen sinks, the garages, that's all nonsense.
And that's Milt Leitenberg of the Federation of American Scientists.
Bob, how much does this debate change now with these attacks in New York and Washington?
Well, arms control specialists point out that the attacks in Washington and New York were very low-tech, in a sense. The terrorists using knives to take control of planes and using the planes as weapons. So it won't change necessarily the debate about what capacity terrorists have or do not have to organize an attack with biological weapons. However, the ability to avoid detection, to coordinate for hijackings, and their willingness to cause mass murder, these aspects have bioterrorist experts very, very concerned about the consequences for biological weapons.
U.S. government says that spending $2 billion a year to prevent or mitigate a bioterrorist attack, is that enough?
Well, there's quite a debate about that as well. Some would actually say it's perhaps too much or not being spent in the right direction, because you could put it into intelligence gathering, into developing new machines to detect biological weapons, or put into vaccines. The United States, for example, has ordered new stocks of vaccine for smallpox. One of the disappointments, though, in terms of all the measures that are being taken is the United States' decision to withdraw from talks to put into place a verification mechanism for the Biological Weapons Treaty. There were talks going on for 6 years. The United States this summer pulled out of the talks, saying that the proposed draft treaty wasn't strong enough, that it had too many loopholes. Others say that the United States may be doing this just because of trade reasons. That is, the plan called for inspection of plants, industrial operations, factories that might be able to make this material. And the United States feared that UN inspections teams might have spies in them that would take away industrial or commercial secrets.
Bob Carty reports on environmental issues for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Bob, thanks for taking this time with us today.
My pleasure, Steve.